Hey, it's the holiday season and we're approaching the end of the year, and I wanted to celebrate by bringing the top 10 episodes back to the front for everybody to listen to. And so we're resuming our countdown today with number 8. It's an episode that we released in January of 2022 with Camilla Jeffs and Bernardo Charles. And so I hope you enjoy the episode. And of course, check back tomorrow for episode number 7. Welcome to the Diary of an Apartment Investor podcast. I'm your host, Brian Briscoe. Super excited for today's show. We got two great people on the line with us today. We got Camilla Jeffs and we got Bernardo Charles. So Camilla, as tradition, you know, you're up first. So welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Brian. I'm excited to be here.
Yeah, excited to have you. I mean, we've been kind of running around the same circles for a long time now. So it's great to finally get you on the podcast.
I know. We should have done this earlier.
We should have, you know, and I don't know, I have somebody running on the scheduling for me now, and she gives me a spreadsheet of, you know, potential podcast guests, and it took a while, but glad it's finally here. And, let's start talking about you. I mean, that's why we're here. So tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah. So I'm Camilla Jeffs. I am founder and CEO of Steady Stream Investments. It's my real estate syndication company. And the company is, I always say it's an education company. So I built Steady Stream Investments to be an educational company to focus on it and educating passive investors and how to get involved in large multifamily investments. Mm-hmm. I call them group investing. I don't like to use the term syndication so much because, you know, group investing, it just helps you understand really what it is. It's just a group of people coming together to buy a big apartment complex. And instead of going out and buying your own and doing mm-hmm. everything yourself, you just join a group of investors and you do a small piece of it. And we all share in the returns.
I like that. It makes it a lot easier to explain to people as well when you phrase things like that. We talk about syndications and we're syndicators, a syndication firm, and you know, a lot of people, you know, kind of scratch their heads and they're like, "What's a syndication?" You know, that's probably a very common question. And you do a really good job. Just, hey, we're investing as a group in a project, and it's super easy for people to understand. So tell us a little bit more where you're from, where you're at right now, and where you're looking to invest.
So where I'm from is a tricky question. I was mm-hmm. a military baby. So I was born in Germany and lived all over the place. And I know you know all about this, Brian.
I do. Yeah.
Your kids all over the place too, right? Mm-hmm. But we landed in, when my dad got out of the military, we landed in Northern Utah, and that's where I spent most of my teenage years. And then after I got married, we have lived in 5 states since then. We've lived in Indiana, in Georgia, Arizona, Texas, and we are currently in Texas. And that was all because of W-2 jobs. So sometimes mm-hmm. it was his job that moved us to a different state. Sometimes it was my job. More recently, it's been my W-2 mm-hmm. job that's moved us to other states. But I'm excited because I just left that. I was able to exit that to be full-time in real estate about 8 weeks ago. So I'm excited to.
Yeah. And I think we were like a couple of days apart from going, you know, leaving our W-2. What date specifically did you leave?
October 1st.
October 1st. Okay. I left November 1st. So we were a month apart, but, and I mean, we went to rival colleges. So I just have to ask this question as well. You say Northern Utah, what high school did you go to?
I went to Box Elder High School in Brigham City.
Okay. We were not rivals with Box Elder. So, I went to Layton High School, you know, down the freeway. So,
we played him in soccer. I was on the varsity girls soccer team. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we would drive up for football games, and I swam and played water polo, and we were, you know, up at the Box Elder pool a couple of times, but,
You were a swimmer. What did
I
you
was?
Your event? I was a swimmer too.
I did breaststroke and butterfly.
I was a breaststroker, not butterfly. Wow. So that's too hard.
Yeah. It's, you know, at first it was difficult, but once you get into it, honestly, I think breaststroke is actually the harder stroke. Once you learn the fundamentals, once you start practicing. I was always more tired after, you know, 100 yard breaststroke than 100 yard butterfly. But maybe that means I wasn't trying hard enough when I was doing butterfly. I don't know. But really cool. So, Awesome. Box Elder. So Brigham City's growing right now. I mean, it's one of those, it's crazy. It's not a little town anymore. It's got some more substance to it. But so W-2 jumped around a lot of different places, ended up in Texas. Where in Texas are you right now?
North Dallas area.
North Dallas. Where in North Dallas?
We live in a tiny town called Gunner, Texas.
Okay.
And it's population of like 1,500.
All right.
Country. We have chickens and animals, and our nearest grocery store is 25 minutes away.
Okay. All right. So, north of Dallas, not North Dallas.
Yeah. North of, about an hour north of the airport.
Okay. All right. Well, incidentally, I was actually in Dallas last weekend. So had I known you were in that area, I probably would have texted you and said, hey, look, I'm in Dallas. But I was in Plano, Frisco, Prosper, and we looked at some properties in that area. So
Prosper is very close to my house.
Okay. Nice. Nice. So yeah, next time I'm down there, we'll have to, meet for lunch or something, but, it'd be awesome. So Dallas is hot. It's a hot market. Is that where you're investing right now?
Not yet. So I've only lived here for about a year. So I've spent the last year trying to get to know the market and trying to exit my W-2. But currently I invest in Arizona. That's where we moved from. And most of my assets are in Arizona, but I also invest in Oklahoma. And I love the Oklahoma market. And so I'm just about 3 hours south of most of my investments in Oklahoma. So I consider myself boots on the ground for those ones. I can go up and visit them at any time.
And 3 hours is close enough. It's close enough. It ends up being a long day, but it's a day trip is all it is, So, and I realize I'm about 3 hours from, if we do a property in North Dallas, like we want to, I'll be as close to boots on the ground as Four Oaks has. And I'm 3 hours away too. So it's about a 2.5 hour airplane ride and, a 30 minute Uber. So about the same. Yeah. I mean, for our asset managers and our acquisitions guys, they're all roughly, 3 to 4 hours from the property we have in the Southeast. I think that's definitely doable. So, so Oklahoma, are you talking Oklahoma City? You're talking Tulsa? Or something else?
I have an asset in Tulsa and one in Oklahoma City.
Yeah. Awesome. And where in Arizona?
Phoenix and Tucson.
Okay. All right. Nice. Yeah. Phoenix and Tucson, both super hot markets right now. I mean, wow. I mean, they match the summer temperature in Phoenix, how hot they are. So, Well, cool. Well, tell us about, one of these deals that you've done. Pick your first, your favorite, or more recent, and give us some details.
Yeah. So, I'll talk about one of the Oklahoma ones. So the Oklahoma one, it's 100 units in the Tulsa area. So it's actually technically Pryor, which is just outside of Tulsa. And, this is a really great asset, and it's one that we got from a off market from another investor. And so another investor was, looking to sell and had got to know my partners really well. And my partners, just put the deal together and said, hey, let's you're ready to sell. We're ready to buy. Let's do this. And so put the deal together and, we're able to purchase it. And the cool thing about it is the property manager that's there, it's Winfield Property Management, obviously the best property management company I've ever worked with. And she's from Tulsa. Her name's Amy Winfield, and she's from Tulsa. And they had already been managing it for this investor. And so they had already started working on it and trying to get the property up because it had a bad reputation before the previous owner took it over. Well, once we took it over, we just continued the momentum and the trajectory, and we have been able to already hit our pro forma year three within 6 months, which has been crazy, right? Because we weren't anticipating that to happen. And the fun thing about it is that we are giving our investors a distribution this week. And they weren't expecting a distribution till March of next year. And so we're giving them like a Christmas bonus. And it's really exciting to be able to hit something and to do well with the property and, right away and just have it cash flowing really nicely.
Mm-hmm. Now, tough question for you. All right. So you're hitting your year three numbers.
You know, and I'll make this multiple choice, and D is, you know, none of the above. But do you think it's because of your extra conservative underwriting that you hit those numbers, or has the market just grown to the point? Has the market grown faster than you guys expected, or none of the above?
So it's a little bit of a combination. So we were uber conservative in our underwriting, and we wanted to make sure that we didn't. That we could just hit things, right? We want to under promise, over deliver. I almost said it backwards.
I've said it backwards before too. Yeah. Big conference. I said it backwards and people were making fun of me for it. So yeah. Yeah.
So because of the conservative underwriting, things have gone well. But the other thing is that, the market there in prior, it's not an Arizona market. It's not one that's like heating up this 28% year over year rent growth. But it is doing well, and the fundamentals are good there in such that there's a strong demand for housing. So really strong demand for housing. So some of the units that we turned, we were able to achieve a little bit more in rent than we thought we could. We asked the property manager, just try it, right? Add $15 and try it and see what happens. And turns out, no problem. They were able to rent it out, no problem. And so because of that, growth there, then we were able to achieve it. It's not like skyrocketing growth, but it is a little bit of growth and a little bit more demand for the product. And we made the product really nice. Like we've already had comments from current residents who've been there for a while about how much nicer the property is and how it feels. The feel of it is just better. And so it's really starting to attract really high quality tenants. And that's been important for our business plan too.
I want to talk about that a little bit more. What things do you think you guys have done to make the tenants say that?
Yeah, so some of the things are making it safer, right? So addressing any crime issues right away. So any challenges happening with crime, we want to address that right away. The other thing is improving the visual appeal of the property. Mm-hmm. So things like handrails, the handrails on the properties were kind of old and bent and run down. Well, we're going in and we're replacing them immediately, right? The property manager suggested to us, and it was funny because she suggested it kind of tentatively, as in she didn't think an owner would really care about handrails. Mm-hmm. We're like, no, we care about that. We want everything to look nice, and we want the whole feel of the property to feel different than it did before. Mm-hmm. We've done other things, and this is an interesting strategy. I really like it. We have put in reserved parking spots. So you can pay to reserve a parking spot that is right next to your unit. And the tenants are so excited about that. They're falling all over themselves to get a premier parking spot so they don't have to walk very far away to get to their unit, right? Mm-hmm. And the way ours are set up is it's actually a lot. There's a couple of buildings that have 30 units in them, but then we have a whole bunch of fourplexes that are spread out across. And so you can imagine that, parking spots would be important for them. And so things like that, and then just paying attention to the residents, just being on top of their needs and whatever they need, and addressing maintenance issues very quickly. That's been really important to us in the professional way that we treat them. I think that's made the difference. And then one other thing that we've been doing is we've started doing community activities. So we'll have like a Halloween activity for the kids, and the kids come out and do some trick-or-treating. We have little fun little pumpkins. They can do paint the pumpkins, So we're trying to make it feel more like a community rather than just a apartment complex.
Nice. Nice. Yeah. I think that those are all really, really good things there. And, a lot of people, I think when they go into complexes like this, they have like this inside out mentality, where you renovate the interiors, and if you have money left over, you do more of the exteriors. I think you guys are paying attention to the exteriors too, which tenants will see. None of the tenants see the other interiors that are getting renovated. And then you went and established a sense of community, which, there's obviously costs associated with that. You've got to pay for the event to be put on and everything, but I think the biggest payback you get is the tenants are stickier. And when you have that sense of community, people are less likely to move. And, obviously we're in this to make money and provide housing, good, safe, clean housing for people. But, when you're doing incremental raises to the rents year over year, they're more likely to just say, yep, you know, that's definitely worth what I'm getting. So I think there's a lot of goodness there. But now, one thing that I love to ask everybody, I have a lot of favorite things, but this is my, you know, favorite question on the podcast, you know. So Camilla, what is your big burning why?
My big burning why?
Yes.
Why do I even do this, right? Why do I get up every day and work hard in this business? So a lot of it is about family for me. Mm-hmm. So I have 5 children, and I work really hard every day for a couple of reasons. So one would be, of course, to provide a financial comfortable life for our family. So we have the ability to take all 5 of them on vacation. You know, when they were young and we were a one income family, it was very hard. It was very hard to do any kind of vacation, right?
Oh, just looking
at airplane plane prices, and to take a family of 7, like multiply that price by 7, and suddenly you're at you know, thousands and thousands of dollars to go on just one trip. Well, I was frustrated by that, and I wanted to have the ability to take them on multiple trips, and not just fun family trips, but I want to take them on humanitarian trips too. And I want to take them and have them experience the world in a really big way. So that's one of the reasons. Reason 2 about family is that I wanted to be a good example to my kids of going after big dreams and big things and working hard in a business and showing them what it takes to get there and showing them the good, the bad, and the ugly, right? They live with me. They'll see the days that I'm off, the days that I'm frustrated, and the failures that I have. And and I talk to them about that. And I'm very open about, you know, well, didn't go well today. things are rough. And we'll do that. And they're so funny because I have twin daughters who are 16. And they were laughing the other night because we were having dinner, and they're like, "Mom, I bet we're the only teenagers who talk about investing at the dinner table."
Like, what a great problem to have, you know? I mean, wow. Yeah.
Yeah. So I'm passionate about helping my family. But then the really cool thing about my investing experience is that the first 15 years of my investing journey was all just us doing our own thing, right? Doing our own single family rentals. We'd go renovate the houses. We did a small multis. We launched property management, and we never partnered with other people. We never did any type of group investing. So when I found the group investing concept, I was so enamored by it. I thought, this is amazing. It's amazing the impact that we can create for multiple families. So it's not just my own family and my own investing. Now I can put together a group of people to purchase something, and we all share in the returns. And then, of course, the cool thing, if you're the passive investors, you're not the one doing any of the work, right? You don't have to be the landlord anymore.
You don't have to be the property manager. You don't have. Yeah, exactly. Awesome. Yeah. And, you know, I mean, 5 kids, my hat's off to you. You know, we have 5 kids as well, but I think my wife's got the brunt of that. Cause, so interestingly, just retired, they gave me, my retirement statement, which detailed exactly how long I've been away from home. The answer was 6 years and 6 months. So, so my wife knows a lot better what it's like to raise 5 kids than I do, but, only 6 years and 6 months. That's no big deal. Wow. Yeah. But, it's a lot, but, anyway, I love your why, love your story. And I think, that there's a lot to learn from that. I love the group idea. You take your tribe with you, you know, so to speak. So, that said, last question for you, and then we'll bring Bernardo on. So what's next for you?
Yeah. So I think I spent 2021 really building my business. So really focusing on me, on the business, building out the processes, procedures, and all the things, and trying to achieve a certain level of success. And I feel like I've achieved that. And I feel like I did, I achieved what I set out to do in 2021. In fact, I probably went beyond what I thought I could do.
Congratulations. Yeah.
But 2022 for me, I really want to flip the script. I want the focus to be more outward. I want it to be on bringing this, the group investing concept to more and more families and helping to create impact in their lives. I want to create more impact in the lives of the residents of all the you know, assets that I bring up. And so that's the main focus will be for 2022 is just how much more impact can I create both financially and socially and environmentally for people through the means of real estate. So that's really what's next for me.
So increasing your impact. I love it. I love it. All right. Well, we're going to shift gears a little bit here and bring on Bernardo. So Bernardo, welcome to the show.
Thank you, Brian. It's good to be here.
Yeah, great to have you on. So do us a favor. Tell us a little bit about yourself.
Yeah, of course. So my name is Bernardo, originally from Haiti, born and raised, and I came to the States when I was 9 years old. Growing up, I was told, hey, here's a pencil and a paper, you know, and go to school, get A's and B's, get a good job, and you'll be fine. So that's what I did. Yeah. I went to school. I went to UCF here in Orlando, Florida.
Nice.
Became an engineer. And in my head, that was going to be major. So I was excited. Mm-hmm. I got my first full-time job with the Air Force out in OKC. So Camila, I have been there before. Nice. I lived there for a couple of years. And I was living it out. I thought I had made it. And I did everything I was not supposed to do. And the first thing I did was buy a new, brand new sports car. I was excited. Got me a Camaro.
Right.
Stick shift, you know, dark blue. And I was on a high, man. And a year later, I got into an accident and the car was totaled. And that event kind of woke me up. I feel like I was in a matrix and that event kind of just woke me up. And I realized that I've been living, you know, paycheck to paycheck with a full-time salary, which made no sense to me. And so, you know, the car, it was worth a lot less a year later than when I bought it. So nothing was adding up. And so that event allowed me to shift focus. I dove into books, podcasts, meetups, and bought my first property a year after that. And then I've been investing ever since. Currently at 50 units, 45 in a syndication as an LP. And then I myself own 5 doors in Florida. So that's me in a nutshell.
Awesome. Yeah, I think it's funny. You know, I talked about my military background, but you'd see... especially after deployments, you'd see like the young enlisted come back, and there were more, I think, Mustangs per capita in a Marine Corps base parking lot than anywhere else in the United States, because that's what they all did. You know, they would be gone for 6 or 7 months, not have a paycheck to spend, and come back, and you know, I finally arrived. I got some money and V8 Mustang, V8 Camaro. You know, we had Chargers. We had, you know, Harley Davidsons. And, you know, funny story. Then I'll kick the mic back to you. But I was driving a young Marine around, and he was probably 15 years younger than me. And he's like, sir, no offense, but you're driving a 15-year-old Honda. He's like, you're making twice as much of all of us. He's like, I drive a Mustang and, you know, all my friends drive really, really nice cars. Why do you drive a 15-year-old Honda? And my answer was, well, because every available penny I have is going to buy houses, and I have a bunch of investment houses. But yeah, it's just that philosophy that, you know, I learned it from Rich Dad, Poor Dad. But anyway, you brought up something that just reminded me of a lot of what I saw, you know, just in the last 20 years in the military. But so that said, you got 5 single family homes, invested as an LP in 45. What made you want to transition or switch from single family to multifamily?
Well, so right now I have, 5 units. It's mostly, you know, duplexes and 1 single family.
Okay.
But I realized, you know, my goal is to leave my W-2 as Camila did this year, by the way. That's awesome. Congrats on that. And it would take me a long time to buy single family homes to be able to have the cash flow to match my income and my W-2. So I realized for me to get there, I need to be able to have more units to be able to scale much more faster, right? So that's why I'm shifting from duplexes and tries to bigger units to get there in a year or two and walk away from there. So
I love it. You know, and it was one day that I had the same realization. I was doing the single family, you know, rentals, and eventually realized the exact same thing. You know, how long is it going to take me? How many single families is it going to take me to get the passive income that I want? And for me, the answer was too many, you know, and that's when I started trying to figure out different ways, and I landed on multifamily, obviously, but well, that's awesome. So Bernardo, what's your big burning why? I mean, you talked about replacing your income, but is there something deeper than that?
Yeah. So my why in the beginning was, you know, my income, but now I realize mm-hmm. it's much more than that, right? Because yeah. I have a daughter who is now about to be 7 months old. Mm-hmm. And I'm missing certain things. I'm missing, you know, her babbling, her rolling over. And so I'm looking to buy back my time, right? It's not mm-hmm. the money aspect, right? I just want to buy back my time to be able to spend it with my family and go on trips and see her grow. And that's really my biggest desire, is to be able mm-hmm. to have my time back. Because right now my mother's still working. She's in her 50s, mm-hmm. which doesn't make sense. I don't think life should be this way, so we have to work till you're 62 and so forth, and not really mm-hmm. enjoy any of it. And so I barely get to see her because she's always working, right? So I'm realizing mm-hmm. I need to get my time back to see her more often, see my yeah. wife more often, my kid more often. So it's buying back my time, essentially, is my biggest why, is the time aspect.
Nice, nice. Yeah, I love it. I love it. I mean, we're here. I don't think we're here on the earth to work a W-2. You know, for 40 years. I mean, that's not our purpose in life. And I think a lot of people end up doing that because, you know, they just fall into the same routine that they're taught. Like you, I was taught, get a good job, you know, work for a good company and your company will take care of you, you know? So is that true anymore? I don't know. Maybe, probably not, but anyway, well, that said, thanks for sharing your story and your why with us. And now another one of my favorites, not my favorite question, my favorite part of the show, where I get to say, hey, Bernardo, we got Camilla here. What do you want to ask her?
Of course. So my first question for you, Camilla, is you just left your W-2, and that's my goal. My next goal is to do the same thing. What was your biggest fear, you know, in doing so, that you had by walking away from that job?
I had two big fears. One, money, of course, right? Because the steady paycheck, it was comforting for me, right? It was comforting to me to know that the paycheck was coming in steady all the time. Real estate has some steadiness to it and some not, right? Yeah. And so you have the... you have to keep that in mind and you have to factor that in. And so for me, you know, in order for me to feel comfortable leaving my W-2, I wanted to know that I had already replaced at least 70% of my income. I'm not one that could just burn the boats and just, you know, go for it. Right. I need safety and security because, you know, I got a big family. So that was one thing that was nerve-wracking to me. And then the second one that caused me a lot of anxiety was just, when you become an entrepreneur, now everything is on you. There's no more pull, right? Like nobody is like coming to you and saying, hey, Camilla, I need you to do this by this deadline. It's all myself pushing myself out into the world, right? And so that is a very different mindset that you have to be prepared for when you leave a W-2, because your W-2, they'll come to you. They'll tell you what to do. Nobody's telling me what to do right now. Nobody's telling me that I should go this direction, that I should wake up on a Monday morning. I should be on a podcast with Brian Briscoe at this time, right? I'm the one that has to be out there and saying, okay, my goal, I'm going to set a goal in Q4 to be on 20 podcasts. And that's the goal I set for myself. And now I have to go out and I have to make it happen. So that was another thing that was scary to me, because it's just a complete shift in mindset. And to be honest, it was a bumpy transition. When mm-hmm. when I first left, that first, you know, day one, and my calendar's white, right? Because I worked in HR for tech companies. My calendar was full all the time. I always had things bouncing from one to the next. And then I'm faced with complete white space. It was a little bit disconcerting. And I was like, oh, nobody needs me.
Yeah.
So it's very different, very different.
Yeah. I would echo what she said. My biggest challenge is not having somebody say, I need this by that date. I mean, I as a W-2 employee, I would prioritize things by due dates. You know, it's like, I got this product due this time, I got this report due at this time, you know, and that would run my schedule. But, you know, same as Camilla, you know, it's, you know, I, 2 weeks from now, my entire calendar is completely blank, you know, and, you know, maybe 1 or 2 hours here and there, but, you know, being your own boss does have its certain challenges. It's got a lot of allure, but, end of the day, you know, the buck stops with me. You know, I'm the only person that makes it so I make a little more money or make less money. And that's, scary, but exciting at the same time.
Right. And I can see how, you know, having a paycheck, it's so comfortable. It's knowing that I have the security there, and I can see people around me at my job who just feel that way. And I have to remind myself every day, hey, this is temporary. You're going to be out of here in a year or two. Just leverage the time and get things done. So it's a constant reminder that this is not, you know, forever. Don't rely on a paycheck to just survive. Right. So my next question for you, Camilla, is, you know, I'm an engineer. So my main value that I add in this space is underwriting. And so as an underwriter, how much value is that position in a GP, you know, overall? Because I'm looking to either build my team or join a team as an underwriter. So how would you evaluate the value that I can provide to someone as an underwriter?
Yeah, so your value as an underwriter can be very big. And it kind of depends on your team. So I think of a GP team as there's four main roles. There's your acquisition specialist, your underwriter, your capital raiser, your asset manager. Of course, those roles can be blended and people can do multiple things in there. But those are the four main roles. And so really the underwriter is kind of the person in the background. They're not the one that are out there trying to find the deals. But if you can align yourself, I think I would align myself with a really great acquisitions person. Someone who loves to go talk to brokers and find deals and talk to owners so that, you know, when they get the deal flow come in, they can pass you that deal flow. You spend the time doing the underwriting for them. And then, you know, you come back to them and say, okay, here's the numbers on this one. I think we could offer this. And then they could be the ones putting in the LOIs, right? So I think that would be your main partner person that you would want to team up with, is someone who really loves the acquisitions side of things.
Yeah. I'd also say that your skill set is probably well suited for part of the asset management as well, because I mean, as an underwriter, you know, you're looking over the numbers and the budgets and everything else. And that's a good portion of the asset management, is making sure that, you know, the budgets are in line. And, you know, occasionally you have to change your budgets. You have to, you know, reallocate money here, reallocate money there. So I think, depending on how you market yourself, you know, you could also learn, you've learned to underwrite, but you could also learn the asset management portion as well, where you're providing the same type of skill set to either the asset manager or your asset manager yourself.
Cool. Yeah. So I definitely appreciate that, guys. My next, my next thing, you know, so far I've been a one-man show. I've been calling brokers, underwriting deal, raising money. As a capital raiser, I find myself almost asking for the money, and, you know, I failed miserably. So, and I've been hearing podcasts, people saying, you don't really ask for the money, but you present an opportunity for them to invest with you. So Camilla, how do you train your mind to remember or to kind of be in that space of not asking per se, but just you're presenting an opportunity to people, and if they want to invest with you, they can, but it's not, hey, I need your money, or hey, I need to borrow, or, you know, I don't want to seem desperate to the person per se.
Yeah. Yeah. Great question. I mean, I had this exact same experience, but the first time I attempted to raise capital for a deal, I talked to a lead sponsor and I said, hey, I'll come on. And I think I can raise 500,000. And I already spent a bunch of time working with investors, and I talked to a lot of people, and they all said, yeah, I'm interested. But there's a very big difference between someone being interested and someone actually investing in a deal, because it's a lot of money, right? I mean, if they're putting $50,000 to $100,000 into your deal, that's a lot to chew, right? So I failed. I told them I'd raise 500K, and I ended up raising 50,000. Like, one investor invested 50,000 into that deal, and therefore I couldn't even get into the deal as a general partner, right? But I still put my investor into the deal because they were excited about it and it was the right thing to do. So I pondered about that experience, and I looked back at that, you know, after I'd hung my head for a little bit and been frustrated with myself, and said, okay, what can I learn from that experience? And what you said, Bernardo, is exactly what I learned. I learned that it was all, I had positioned it as all being all about me. Like, I need their money. I need to get in on this deal. It was, everything was about me instead of being about them. And I think, Bernardo, you have a really big advantage because you have already positioned yourself as a passive investor. You are a passive investor in a thing. So if you think critically about this, and this is the way I did it too, I invested passively first into syndications before I ever stepped into being a general partner. So if you think critically about your process, what was it like for you? What did you need to know? What did you need to understand? How comfortable did you need to feel? Like, did you understand everything? Maybe you didn't. Maybe there were some things you wish you had understood before you stepped into that. So think really critically about the steps that you took, the things you needed to understand, and then you take every one of those pieces and you write something about them. You create a video about it, whatever, right? You create massive educational value for other people to invest. And then you're simply presenting to them, you're presenting to them education on the topic. And then and then you combine that with an investment opportunity. And yes, that's the way you got to talk about it. This is an investment opportunity, you know, that you want to take a look at. You know, take a look at this. Do you want in on it or do you not want in on it? Create a little bit of scarcity around it, you know, saying, you know, it's only going to be open because typically a deal we launch is only available for a week, 2 weeks, right? Sometimes they go in a day. I've had ones that have in 24 hours, all the spots are gone. And so as you do that, but I want to caution you, Bernardo, that don't get something. I got real discouraged in the beginning because I failed, right? And then it took some time for me to actually have success. But the really interesting thing about raising capital is that it's a momentum game, and you just got to keep putting one foot in front of you as you go every day. You got to continue. Okay, how else can I educate people? Who else can I talk to about this and be excited about the opportunity? Like, I just love this. It's so cool. And if you just continue doing that, you will have massive success down the line, but don't be too anxious to have it now.
Yeah. One thing I like to do is say, I mean, and you have to be able to do this obviously, but I would say, hey, I'm investing in this deal. Do you want to invest with me? All right. I mean, if you come at it from that mindset, I'm investing this deal, will you invest with me? You know, it doesn't have the same, I'm desperate. It's more of a, there's something I have that I want to share with you. And that's really the mentality that gets people to want to invest, you know? And, you know, recently we're going to be closing on a deal in the next, week or two. And, that's the approach that I took. You know, I wasn't the main capital raiser, but I am putting $50,000 into the deal. I did send an email to about 20 people just to help the capital raising portion out. And that's what the email said. And I had a very high response rate to that email. It was, I'm investing in this deal for the following reasons. Do you want to also invest with us?
And how do you keep your investors interested in between deals, right? So if you have close people who are investing with you and you have more deals coming, how do you keep their attention, so to speak, throughout the, you know, different deals that you have?
Yeah, great question. Great question. I think this is where a lot of syndicators get it wrong, because they think that once they get them on their list, that they will always be interested. And then when a deal comes, they will invest. But again, like I said, it's a very big difference between someone who's interested and someone who actually invests. So education is huge here. And so my process, I'll share with you my process, is I hold webinars twice a month for my investors, for those people who are on my list, so they can learn about it. The one I did last week was the three biggest risks of passive investing. And they're just short little 20-minute things, and I'll be live and then do a 10-minute Q&A after. So twice a month webinars. I email educational material to my list. I'm constantly posting on social media and being, you know, guest speaking in podcasts, at meetups, etc., just to continue to constantly educate. And that does a couple of things, right? One, educates the people on your list. Two, keeps you top of mind. right? And so that they know you and they're familiar seeing you. And so if they're thinking about, right, if they got a big inheritance all of a sudden, the first thing they're going to think about is you. They're going to be like, oh, I should go talk to Bernardo because he has investment opportunities and I got to put this money somewhere. I can't put it in a bank. That would be ridiculous. And so that's what it does for you, right? And then it educates them enough so that when a deal does come along, they'll be excited to invest and actually invest in your deal.
Yeah. The only thing that I'll add to that is, the podcast is part of that as well. You know, you try to put as much material, much content out there, and Camila nailed it on the head. You want to stay on top of mind, right? Because, as you know, people who are looking to invest, they typically don't just know one sponsor. You know, a lot of people that know Camila know me and vice versa, you know, so, you know, you want to be on top of mind. And when you have an opportunity, you don't want them to think, who was that again? You know, you want them, oh, hey, Brian's got an opportunity. Awesome. You know, that's the reaction you want from them is, oh, hey, great. I love this guy, you know? And so all the content that you put out, and I'm big on LinkedIn, I've got Instagram running and the podcast running, but that's the key, what Camila said, you know, I'll just, like I said, dive deep on that one is you want to stay top of mind.
Gotcha. Yeah, I've been doing some reels and some lives on IG to kind of stay, you know, in the space and just be more active on Instagram and LinkedIn and so forth. But I think that's how I met you, Brian. So yeah. I hope it's working.
Yeah, well, got us to meet. So, I mean, there you go.
Gotcha. Yeah. Next question I have, Camila. So you mentioned you did 15 years of investing in single family homes before you shifted to multifamily. And right now I'm in, I think, year two or so. What was your lowest point in that time frame, and how did you overcome that, you know, as far as your mindset and mentally to say, hey, it's been 15 years. I know I want to get to this, to X, right? And how did you overcome that lowest point of that time frame?
Yeah. So, I mean, I just hit burnout, right? Just the classic burnt out landlord, right? Been doing this for so long. And I wanted a better way. And I always had on my vision board to buy an apartment complex. And so I knew that was that should be the next step in the journey. But the challenge was the how of it. How do you even buy an apartment complex? Because I'd never purchased, none of my properties were over $1 million, and all apartment complexes cost millions of dollars, right? So I'm trying to figure this out. But really, I think my attitude always has been everything is figure outable. Is that even a word? I don't think that's a word.
It is now. Yeah, figure outable. Right? Absolutely.
Figure outable.
Yeah.
You can figure things out. And I think the hardest part for me was really figuring out partnering. That was really challenging because, like I said, just DIY up until then. But apartment investing is more, you know, groups, right? So how do I figure out the right partners and who to find or whatever. But I've always had this burning desire, and sometimes it pulls me. It's like it's deep inside of achievement, right? Like I've got to achieve to feel fulfilled. And so I allowed that to pull me through the really tough moments because I know deep down that I have really great potential and that I can get there. And I believe that everybody has that inside of them. Everybody has that inside of them. You just have to allow it to help you instead of stifling it.
Yeah.
I was going to say, I think this year, and that was my biggest mistake, was doing everything myself. Because up until this point, just me and my wife buying our duplex or our single family. And so it's been hard having to shift to, hey, you need a team around you to be able to go to this next level. And so I'm still struggling here and there to kind of get to that level, but I realized that's the path for me to be able to, you know, progress. So,
yeah. I said the low point on my journey was the day I turned 40. And the reason why, I mean, it wasn't just because of the turning 40, you know, it was when I was, you know, late 20s, I read Rich Dad, Poor Dad, Cash Flow Quadrant. And I made a lot of goals, and all of my goals were by my 40th birthday, by the time I'm 40. And it was my 40th birthday that made me realize that I didn't hit a single one of those goals. right? You know, so I had passive income goals. I had net worth goals. I had, you know, number of asset goals. This is how many, you know, single family homes I want in my portfolio goals. I hit zero, you know? And so for me, that was an incredibly low point. Being 40 and on a deployment without my family kind of contributed to it. But at the same time, I churned and I used that as fuel. And a lot of times, you know, when I'm having a bad day or when I need the motivation, I close my eyes and I put myself back in that moment, that exact moment right there. And I just say, I never want to feel like that again. I never, ever, ever want to feel like that again. And that's what gets me going.
So. I think one of my lowest points that I remember was right before my accident that happened with the Camaro. Me and the wife got into an argument at the time, my girlfriend, about something. Mm-hmm. And as we were arguing, she said, you know, you work in this nice job, you're an engineer, you're making this money, but yet you have nothing to show for it. Nothing. And I'm just like, what are you talking about? I have a Camaro outside, brand spanking new, like, but she was right. I had nothing to show for it. I was struggling to survive. I was living, barely making ends meet, right? And so that shifted my mindset to, hey, you need to kind of think bigger than just here and now, right? So at that point, I just shifted my mindset and just slowly I began to just do things differently, you know? So
yeah. Now you'll have something to show for it. So boom.
Right.
Or you do have something. You got five units and, you know, 45, you know, a passive investment and 45 more. Well, we are about out of time. Actually, we are out of time. I wasn't paying attention. We are out of time. So one question quickly for both of you. And Camilla, you get to go first. How can listeners learn more about you?
You can find me at my website, CamillaJeffs.com. I have a lot of educational material. Like I said, I run an education company, so you can connect with me there, and happy to chat with anybody.
Awesome. Perfect. And we'll put a link to that in the show notes for anybody interested. And Bernardo, same question for you. How can listeners learn more about you?
Yeah. So I'm very active on Instagram. So you can find me there at Bernardo_buys_multifamily.
All right. And we'll put a link to your profile in there as well. And anybody, just for the listeners, definitely reach out to people. If something you've heard in this podcast resonated with you, I mean, definitely reach out to, you know, Camilla or Bernardo and, you know, get talking. So that said, thank you both of you once again for coming on the show. I very much appreciate your time today. Thanks for listening to the Diary of an Apartment Investor podcast by the Tribe of Titans. If you're still listening, you obviously liked it. So go ahead and subscribe to the podcast, leave a 5-star rating and review if you haven't already, and then make sure to check out our YouTube channel, which incidentally has a ton of video content that you'll also enjoy and learn from. Now, if you're interested in being on the show, go to our website, diaryofanapartmentinvestor.com, and fill out the questionnaire on the website. And for more educational content and for more information about our educational community, check us out at thetribeoftitans.info.